Reading from Luke's Gospel, chapter 12. Jesus told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?'" Well, that's kind of a scary story, illustrating a truth we'd rather not dwell on, or certainly go on and on about. We have, most of us, lived more days than we will. And if that's not true for any of us, that day will come. And in the meantime, we experience a series of transitions that in one sense point toward that ultimate transition. It's kind of the season of transitions, at least in Lubbock for the moment, graduation weekend. Lots of folks watching their, my gosh, they used to be toddlers a minute ago, walk across the stage and become, well, they become a new person. They become a college graduate or someone with a graduate degree. That, in itself, a major transition. Not the only one of that sort that we've experienced kind of together over the last month or so. New grandparents here. Lucille has joined us, and she now has parents who have that identity for the first time. Pam Humble's twin granddaughters, Chandler and Kendall. We've experienced the influx of new life. A couple of graduates in our fellowship from the same family, Wilson and Madison. Had a conversation this week with a young couple that will be married in a month or so. You know her, Rich Gorman and Pam Gorman's daughter, Casey, will be married in June, and we had a conversation this week about that coming up. That's kind of cool. And I had a lunch this week with a friend of mine who rather suddenly, a week and a half or so ago, experienced the loss of his wife. All of these illustrating that life is about many things, but maybe most persistently about transitions. I've just mentioned transitions of the sort that quite literally change our identities. And most of the things that we say about ourselves, most of what we would answer if someone says, "Who are you?" are the result of transitions. If you were to ask our six-year-old, "Who are you?" she would say, "Well, I'm a first grader," as opposed to a preschooler, as opposed to a toddler. "I'm a graduate because I've gone through this number of years of school. I've become a parent, a grandparent, a cancer survivor, a widow." All of these labels, identities, the result of major transitions. The quintessential transition identity, father of the bride. Interesting people, interesting event. I actually enjoy weddings for many reasons. One is the view I get of the social psychology going on at the time. When the bride walks in and everybody watches her, I watch the groom watch the bride. That's interesting. And then we have this little drama that occurs right at the beginning of the service, at which time the father of the bride takes his daughter's hand and hands it to the groom and then goes and sits down. And he's got to walk about 6 or 7 feet to do that. The most masculine, athletic, strong-willed man in the world is weak-kneed in that little 6 or 7 foot walk. In the transition from being father to father of the bride, etc. How do we cope with this stuff? How do we become able to deal with the major transitions in our lives? Well, we cope with the big stuff by learning to cope with the little transitions that, quite frankly, characterize all of our days. The transition from Tuesday to Wednesday is, in its own way, no less profound than the transition from father to father of the bride. We only get so many days, and the next day from the previous reminds us that's one less to do what we might do to be who we are called to be. And we cope with that by at least seeking to find or bring some good in each day. We were taught as young seminarians and pastors that we would be dealing with a lot of folks experiencing loss. And in our youth, perhaps, we've not experienced it to that same degree. But we have, in fact, lost goldfish and had to cope. We have, in fact, moved from one town to the other, leaving friends behind. We've had friends move out of our neighborhoods and so on. We've experienced little losses that teach us how we cope with the big ones. My friend who lost his wife, I was trying to find him, actually, and stopped by his house and then called and thought, well, just on a lark, I'll call him at the office. And he was working 3 days after this had occurred. And he said, I just couldn't stand to be alone in the house. I needed to be where people were, even if it meant being at work, which has its own set of annoyances and transitions. But this is how he has learned to cope. I, on the other hand, would probably crawl in a hole and pull it in after me for a while. But we all learn to cope differently. And the point is, we learn to cope with the big stuff by learning how we cope with the little stuff. There's a website that will tell parents of prospective Texas Tech students how to prepare them, you know, a year in advance for dealing with dorm life and the difference between having a college professor and having a secondary teacher and so on. I have to tell you that I think ahead too. You know, I'm at a stage in my life where, honestly, things are starting to wind down a little bit. This is the third summer in a row that I have not been a summer school teacher. I'm glad of that. I don't ever intend to be a summer school teacher again. One click toward retirement. This is the last summer that I will be on the payroll at Texas Tech. It's the third year in a research grant, and when this grant expires on May 31st, 2013, I will not apply for another one. I've done that part. Little by little by little, we move to the larger transitions in our lives. Because it is in fact the case that one day, probably not today, our souls will be required of us, and it puts things into perspective. I think that's the purpose of all transitions. It's to give us some sense of perspective. That's certainly the point of the parable. Big barns, much grain, whose will they be? Perspective. I think it's designed, these scary stories in the Bible are designed to jar us out of self-absorption, obsessiveness, complacency. One of the things we've got planned for this summer is the week-long care of two grandkids coming to visit us from Illinois. They'll only be there a week. One's 9, one's 6. And I already know how the week's in part going to go. There's this constant, want to play Uno? Can we play ping pong? Let's go to the pool. Can I have a popsicle? And to a lot of those questions, if truth be told, the answer would more likely want to be, no, not really. Not right now. Except we've only got them for a week. And the 9-year-old in about a month and a half will be 15 and sullen and won't want to come visit us anyway. So yeah, let's play Uno. I'll show you the card trick. You want to go to the pool? Go hit baseballs? The answer to all of these questions, truthfully, is no, but is always yes anyway. Because we only got them a week. And they're only 9 for a very short period of time. There's a sense of perspective to be brought to bear here. In a more dramatic way, it reminds me of a conversation I had with Marge Barley, who you perhaps remember. Marge died in 1998 and was taken from us by a dreadful attack of cancer. After surgery, the surgeon told her family, who then asked me to tell her, that the brain tumor was of the worst kind and that it would probably take her life in 6 months. And I've told this story before. We told it at her funeral. I told Marge that in those very words and that directly. And her immediate response was to blink and look at me and say, well, guess I won't bother cleaning the closet. It's an interesting perspective, isn't it? yeah, okay, closets need to be cleaned, but they don't need to be cleaned now or every day. You know, the perspective of the man who this night his soul is required, the perspective of caring for children for a week or for receiving that conversation. Nobody I know, and I've seen many people nearing the end of their lives, nobody I know has ever looked me in the eye and said, you know, I wish I'd spent more time at work. I wish I'd spent less time with people that love me. I wish I'd filled out more paperwork in my life. I really wish I'd been less generous with my money or my forgiveness or my tolerance. Nobody says that. In fact, if there are regrets, they're usually quite the opposite. I like it that we're paying attention to the eclipse tonight. I don't know whether we'll go out to Lubbock Landmark or see it personally other than to maybe catch it on the news, but I like it that we're sort of stopping and saying, you know, this hasn't happened in 18 years and I don't even know when the next one will be. But the fact is we're celebrating the sun tonight, which we don't think about very often, but we should. It was the very first thing that God created when God created creation. God said, let there be light, and there was the sun. If the sun should suddenly dematerialize, 8 minutes and 18 seconds later, we would all be dead, because that's how long it takes for light to get from the sun to the earth. One of my favorite, and I think most life-altering books is entitled Celebrate the Sun, and it's an allegory, and if you want more details about it, I can tell you. But the point is, at the very end, the book is written, and the author says it in just this way, for those who have not forgotten how to live, who take the time to celebrate the sun and are grateful. The transitions teach us that the sun is there to be celebrated. With each day of its rising, celebrate the sun. So yeah, play Uno, ping pong, have another popsicle. And the paperwork will wait for another day or two. For today, in the midst of the transition from Sunday to Monday, is an opportunity to celebrate the sun and to be grateful. Amen.